Chapter 1. What the hell's taking so long? Raynor hated waiting, almost as much as he hated flying. Combine the two together, and he was not a pleasant person to be around. He and his two friends, Hudson and Cohen, stood side by side in the airport, staring out the window at the plane they were already supposed to be on, giving off a how-much-is-that-doggy-in-the-window vibe. They watched as a mechanic and a pilot walked around the small, private plane, discussing who knows what. Raynor hoped they were discussing things like properly working engines and wheels that would appear upon landing. He looked over at Hudson, who was dressed in some expensive suit with a fancy Italian name that Raynor couldn't pronounce. His big arms were crossed over his chest, and his black hair was pulled into a ponytail that reached the middle of his back. The guy looked like he was posing for a picture for GQ, except his body measurements qualified him for a spread in some bodybuilding or wrestling magazine. He stood about 6'5" and weighed around 260, give or take 10 or 15 pounds, most likely on the give side. Hudson didn't say anything, just kept staring out the window at the private jet they were waiting to board. "Better to be safe, and all that," Cohen said quietly, as he pushed his dark mop of hair off his forehead. He was big like Hudson, but didn't have the fashion thing going on. He wore jeans and a t-shirt under his knee-length leather coat. Cohen had a habit of throwing out cliché sayings, but never finishing the last half of them. He used to drive Raynor crazy, but now he just accepted it. Raynor sighed and caught his own reflection in the window. As with Cohen and Hudson, his reflection showed a male somewhere around 30, give or take a few years. He was just as big as his two friends, but his light blonde hair fell to his chin. He wasn't much into the clothes either, but he had managed a pair of black slacks with a black silk t-shirt. Gold hoops hung from each of his ears. He wasn't sure if he liked them or not. The same went for the gold hoops through his nipples. He had been on the losing end of a football bet with Cohen 3 months ago, and the loser had to pierce their ear in one nipple. Raynor had double-tapped it on each. He stared at his tanned skin, his high cheekbones, his full mouth, his dark gray eyes. He had been in this body for a long time, and it was weird to think there was more to him than what stared back at him.
"Okay, gentlemen, they're ready for us."
All three turned to see the very pretty flight attendant who would be serving them on their trip from Reno, Nevada, to Phoenix, Arizona. She was about 25, short, thin, and had her hair pulled back into a ponytail that fell to her lower back. Her crisp, light blue suit matched her eyes and was emblazed with the logo of the company they were renting the jet from. Her name tag read Suzette, and her smile was almost blinding. "Thank you, Suzette," Hudson rumbled, stepping in front of Raynor and offering his arm to her. "May I escort you down?" She giggled and took his arm. Raynor looked at Cohen, who simply rolled his eyes. Raynor wondered if today's flight would be Suzette's first inauguration into the Mile High Club, but kind of doubted it. As they crossed the tarmac toward the sleek white Learjet 45, Raynor took some deep breaths. It wasn't that he was afraid of flying. It just wasn't natural. And things that weren't natural made him... Okay, maybe he was afraid to fly. Hurtling yourself through the air in a tin can that you couldn't fully stand up in wasn't right. He climbed the steps, bent his head down to enter the plane, and planted his ass in the first light brown leather seat. He reminded himself that the plane ride was only an hour and a half. Cohen plopped down in the seat across the aisle, while Hudson moved to a seat in back, the one by the bathroom, which would be easy access for him and Suzette.
"Can I get you guys anything to drink before we take off?" Suzette asked.
Raynor thought about it a moment and nodded. 3 shots of tequila. Whatever you have, as long as it's good stuff." Suzette nodded and looked at Cohen. "Same, except make mine whiskey." Apparently, Cohen had no intentions of being awake for the flight either. Suzette then looked at the back of the plane, smiled, and sashayed back to Hudson. They spoke in low tones, and Raynor heard her giggle. "Yep, he saw this one coming a mile away." A couple minutes later, 3 shot glasses were lined up in front of him along with a wedge of lime. He didn't bother with the lime until all 3 little glasses of liquid were empty. He felt the burn as they made their way into his gut,
the numbing effect on his brain almost immediate. Perfect. Suzette stood in the front and told them what to do if the plane were to suddenly lose air pressure and start spiraling downward. Rainer pulled out his iPod from his jacket pocket and put the earbuds in. He closed his eyes and laid his head back on the soft, plush leather. If the plane goes down, we all die, he thought idly. He pushed play and was greeted by the sounds of Native American music and chants. He found the sound soothing and relaxing, almost hypnotic in a way. Rainer did not sleep, but hovered in that space in between sleep and consciousness, aware of what was going on around him, but too relaxed to care. He didn't really understand his fear of flying. It was actually pretty ridiculous, considering he had blasted through space for 3 months to get to Earth. That had been over 200 years ago, and the decision to get on that ship might have been the biggest mistake of his life. Or maybe it was his decision to join the military on SR-44 that took the title. He didn't know, and he didn't think about it. There was no sense in analyzing past mistakes. He didn't belong here on Earth, and he just longed to go home. And that was why he was being sent to Phoenix by Noah, the leader of their happy, happy little group of warriors, to investigate possible kidnappings by a colonist. Besides Cohen, Hudson, Rainer, and Noah, there was also Jovan and Talon. Talon kept everything on the technical side running with high efficiency, and Jovan had the ability to get a glimmer of a person's emotions if he could physically touch them. Hudson had been sent to Phoenix because he was a brutal, efficient killer. Cohen was a healer, and if Hudson or Rainer got hurt and needed medical attention, Cohen would take care of them. Rainer had been sent because he had volunteered to go. He was a workhorse. Of all the warriors, Rainer was the one who wanted to get the fuck out of Dodge and head home as soon as possible, and he worked tirelessly to make that happen. Home. Jesus, he missed it. SR-44 was light years away, and Rainer hadn't stepped foot on it since they'd landed on Earth 211 years ago, 26 days and some hours that he wasn't counting. They were on a mission to locate and eradicate the colonist who had escaped SR-44, and were causing chaos on Earth. SR-44 consisted of green forests, wildlife, and peace and calm. 80% of the planet was water. So most SR-44ians packed into dense areas filled with skyscrapers that sparkled like freshly buffed gold. The rest of the planet contained forests and saltwater oceans. Those who didn't live in the cities lived in the forest and were simply called forest dwellers. However, no matter where the people of SR-44 made their home, they lived together in peace, which was different than Earth. Rainer often cringed on the rare occasion he watched the news and was left with one question. Why couldn't the nations of Earth just get along? Rainer and his family were forest dwellers. They survived off the land, sharing their habitat with the animals of SR-44. They made their homes in the blue treetops, some 300 feet off the ground, in order to avoid the carnivorous dinosaur-like animals that roamed the forest. The animals were quick and could kill within seconds. Forest dwellers were spiritual people, similar to Native Americans. They believed that a spirit inhabited every living thing, and every living thing was to be respected and revered. They worshipped the spirits who provided them with their food, and prayed to the gods and spirits who provided water. They rarely interacted with those who lived in the cities of gold, opting to stay true to their simple way of life. The inhabitants of SR-44 didn't have bodily forms, in the human sense. Their bodies consisted of wispy-colored smoke that made up a long, lean form, similar to a human's arms and legs, as well as a head. Their bodies continuously moved and swirled, similar to a dancing fire. Every SR-44ian was a different color, some lighter or darker than others. Rainer's SR-44 color had been a fiery red, and each night when he looked in the mirror and saw his red glowing eyes, he was reminded of his SR-44 form. When the sun went down, his eyes glowed the color of his SR-44 form, as did the other warriors. When all of the warriors were all together after sunset, it was a pretty amazing sight. Hudson's eyes burned a bright yellow, while Cohen's were a dark purple. Noah's lit up to orange, Talon's a piercing blue, and Jovan's an emerald green. They look like a basket of Easter eggs. Needless to say, they avoided the night, doing most of their work during the day. Talon had developed contact lenses they could wear during the evening hours, but they were so uncomfortable, and most of the warriors avoided wearing them at all costs. Raynor had lived with his mother, father, his younger brother Emil, as well as a slew of extended family. To the dismay of his family, Raynor had longed to explore outside the forest, to see what the rest of SR-44 was like. He had loved his life in the forest, but he needed to experience new things, to see new sights, to live. His parents had finally relented and told him to go out and explore. "But you must come back to me, son," his mother had said, her royal blue color swirling in front of him. She reached out and grabbed his hand. "Of course, my Moha," he had vowed. He had taken off the next day for the big, bright cities. It was there he had let loose. Humans had a saying, "Party like a rock star," and that was what he had done. While learning the ins and outs of city life, he had met Cohen, who convinced him to join the SR-44 military. That way he could travel the planet and see everything, as well as train to become a certified badass.
"Come on, man. First day's tomorrow. We're going to see our world and maybe some others. It'll be a blast."
The next morning, Raynor had signed up for the military and began his training. He found that he liked the physical training, and he also liked the other males he'd met, Noah and Hudson being among them. Raynor had become very close with Cohen, not only because he liked the guy, but because both of them were different from the others. Cohen had the ability to heal others of their race, while Raynor had inherited the ability to see spirits of those who were caught between life and death, or what he called the Ether. Raynor considered Cohen's ability a beautiful gift. Cohen was able to take his own energy, merge it with the energy of the person who needed the healing, and the two working together were able to repair wounds, heal sickness, and restore health. Raynor didn't really consider his ability a positive thing, more of a curse. Maybe something like a sixth toe that put him off balance, and he would rather ignore and pretend it didn't exist. He used to try to help the spirits he saw, which were few and far between, all whom were not ready to go to their final resting place, and he had failed every time. There were three conditions that his Gomada, his grandmother, had taught him. First, the spirit must be near their body. Second, they needed to be near someone who loved them. And third, that person needed to love them back just as fiercely. Rarely had Raynor seen these three conditions met. He didn't know why, but spirits were really good at losing the body they belonged in. And in his experience, there were very few cases where two people loved each other equally, or enough, to bring the spirit back to the land of the living. When he had graduated into the battle squad, he had been front and center for the epic 3-day party Noah's father had thrown for them. His family had even come out of the forest to witness his graduation and celebrate his accomplishment. Then he was hand-picked with 5 other warriors to right the wrongs of their planet, given the name of the 6 saviors. Unbeknownst to the authorities of SR-44, the evilest criminals, who had been banished to the colony, one of SR-44's moons, had escaped to Earth. The colonists had somehow taken human bodies, mated with human females, and began wreaking the holy hell of havoc on the population. Some of the more notorious serial killers of human history were actually colonists. Jack the Ripper? Yes. Jeffrey Dahmer? Yup. Saddam Hussein and Charles Manson? Hell yes. They were the worst sort of evil that had ever been unleashed on SR-44 or Earth. The people of SR-44 were peaceful, prideful, and ashamed of their living garbage. They were intent on cleaning up the mess that had been unintentionally let loose on Earth. It was made clear that the warriors would not be returning until the colonists were eradicated. Raynor remembered when he had made the decision to get on the ship and go after the colonists. His Moha had wept.
"Be safe, Raynor. Let the spirits guide you.
Don't lose touch with who you are in here. His mother had then touched his chest. And you must come back to me. He had nodded solemnly and made his vow to his mother. He would not lose touch with who he was. But honestly, after living on Earth for 211 years, he was doing a very fine job of it. He no longer felt full of life as he used to. And as for the vow of him returning to his mother, he hadn't broken it, because God knew that each and every day he worked hard to keep it. It was just taking a little longer than expected. Okay, a lot longer. Once the six saviors had landed, they immediately began their hunt for the colonists. They had assumed their job would be easy, a quick in and out. Man, had they been wrong about that one. Those fucking colonists had outsmarted them. They had also taken on human bodies and began mating with human women. So now, instead of hunting and destroying just the original 12 colonists, they also needed to seek out their offspring to see if they had enough colonist DNA in them. Some did, some didn't. If they did, they too needed to be stopped. It seemed like a never-ending mission, but Raynor wouldn't allow himself to think that way. He would live to be around 2,000 years old, so he had another 800 and some odd years to get it done and get home. Until then, he would put one foot in front of the other and continue to be the workhorse of the group, always focused, always looking for the next colonist. He sighed and leaned back in his seat. The plane was taking off, and within seconds, the ground disappeared below him.